Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Hello, guys. It's Phil Hendry. And it is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, where truth is our bitch, and we're here till 1 on the Pacific Coast. We're here till 4 out there on the East Coast, and in-betweensers, you can do whatever you want. You can figure all that stuff out, you know?
Yeah, and get Central Time probably be earlier, right?
Yeah.
Well, you don't have to go into it. I think they can figure it out.
Yeah, but, well, can they?
Yeah, they could probably figure it out. So if we end at 1 o'clock on the West Coast, we're ending at 2 on the mountainside, 3 on the central thing, and 4 on the eastern thing.
What about Nova Scotia?
Nova Scotia is Atlantic time. That would be 5. Do we have an affiliate in Nova Scotia?
I don't know. Do we, bud?
I'll look it up, Mr. Henry, see if there's a Nova Scotia affiliate.
Yeah, you do that, man. Although I could probably tell you right now, no, we don't. But do we have anybody in Halifax? Do we have anybody in Halifax just representing us? Do we have anybody in Halifax that loves us? You don't have to be listening, and you don't even have to know me, but do we just have somebody who's got our back in Halifax? In other words, if my private Piper Club crashed in Halifax, Canada.
What are you talking about?
I'm saying that if I was flying over Halifax, Canada, and my plane crashed, does anybody in that town care whether I live or whether I die?
Yay.
Thank you.
Well, I don't believe you, and you're smiling, you're laughing. I'd like the audience to know he's laughing. He's going, you think you got one over on people, huh?
No, I'm just asking. I think it would be very interesting. One time I was asking people, give us a call wherever you are, tell us where you're at, and call us and tell us what's up. And we got calls from Bombay, India, Japan, Sweden, and not that it was surprising because the internet will, you know, go all over the world, but I was curious because one of our most loyal fans was a cat in Bangalore, India. He was a, you guessed it, a tech guy.
One of those guys goes, yeah, hello, American Airlines, may I help you?
Yeah, okay, bud, you know.
Oh, I'm going to say like that, man. Yeah, it is. That's what they do.
We know, man.
Would you tell him, don't yell, bud.
Why?
Because you're going, why?
You know, it's right in my ear. I got her in my right ear and you in my left ear, okay?
I'm not in your ear.
Yeah, you are with your big fat mouth. So shut up. God, you're blah, blah. So.
Anyway.
God. So, yeah, we had a cat who was a big fan of ours in Bangalore, India.
I'd appreciate if you'd watch the way you say that, please.
What?
You're saying Bangalore. I know it's a real place, but you're saying Bangalore. Never mind. Phil, you can say what you want. I don't want to be disrespected as a woman, and I'm speaking for a lot of women.
Okay, there's a lot of women that are listening right now. Are you all offended by Bangalore, India, the name of, you know?
No, they probably are on account of what they say, bang. Yeah, if you go Bangalore, if you just say Bangalore.
Oh, okay, well, I won't emphasize bang. I'll just say Bangalore.
That's why I do the French, because the French pronunciation does not allow you to, if you will, sewage or marinate in sewage the word.
Marinate in sewage?
Yes. So if you say Bangalore, like a witch, like, and my voice cracked on purpose, not, then it sounds as if you've marinated that word in filth. But if you say Bangalore, then it sounds acceptable.
Now let me ask you this question, Margaret. What if the people that live in that town call it Bangalore?
I can assure you I've known a great many Indian people. Do you know that Gandhi is from India?
Yes, I do.
You do?
Yeah.
Where did you hear that?
There was a whole movie about him.
Phil, don't be a... I know there was a movie. I'm wondering...
Bobby went and saw the movie.
I actually read a biography of Mahatma Gandhi when I was 13.
Oh, did you? Now, you know something? I don't... There's a lot of stuff you say you did when you were 13 that I don't believe, other than the fact... Well...
Other than the fact what?
You said you were masturbating.
Oh, well, thanks very much, Margaret.
You asked me.
You did, Mr. Hardy.
I didn't think she was going to. Anyway, welcome to the program, folks. 877-876-PHIL and online at philhendryshow.com. Excuse me, I just hit a button that caused the zoom on our camera to literally just zero in on one pore of my nose. That was scary. You see that?
Yeah, all of a sudden it's just like an eyeball. Just went, woo! See that?
Yeah, I did, man. That like the Bill Cosby when he had the glasses.
That's a funny Bill Cosby. Not that I want to go back into ancient lore, but there is a Bill Cosby bit that's pretty funny where he talks about when he went and got his bifocals for the first time. You know this one, Margaret?
No.
Anyway, he didn't know how to use them because he's wearing these bifocals and he's also looking through a part of the glass that is not focused, that is not that magnified. So he sees the door, and then when he sees the bifocals, suddenly the... You got to hear the bit. It's suddenly just like right there, and the quarter is the size of the moon or so. I don't know. It was pretty funny. All right, tonight we are very happy to announce, not that we would be unhappy if the Spurs won, but we will tell you that the Miami Heat did win Game 7. LeBron James had a clutch three-point shot. I believe it was a three-pointer there with just seconds to go that pretty much iced it. He had 37 points. He had 5 three-pointers, 15 points. He had, I don't know how many boards. Did he have 12 boards, something like that? He had one hell of a game. He came through. He did what he was brought to Miami to do. He was a leader. He was a clutch player. He promised championships. This is now two, and is delivering. And while he will probably always take, people never get off their, sports fans are the most habitual people in the world. When a sports fan hates you, even if you go out and you break every known record, if you go out and you break Barry Bonds' home run record, and then you go out and you break Wilt Chamberlain's scoring record, and then you go out and you, or Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's scoring record, then you go out and you beat Wayne Gretzky something. You could do it all, man, and they're still going to find a reason to sort of grudgingly admire you. They'll always go, well, he's gotten better. I'll admit that for him. He's gotten, but you know what? He's still got the week. And LeBron James, I have a feeling, is always going to be taking a ton of heat, if you'll pardon the expression.
Ton of heat on a Miami Heat.
Oh, that's not, that laugh.
Watch it. He'll always be taking a ton of crap, because people just, nobody wants to be wrong.
Yeah, that's it, man. Nobody wanted to be wrong because they'd be wrong about LeBron James to say that he did come through. And everybody said he's doing a dog,
Yeah, they're talking about him mounting a dog. He didn't mount no dog.
Do you have to say mount the dog?
Yeah, that's pretty much,
What about cherry pick? I like cherry pick. And I think when it comes to basketball, I think cherry picking is a good one. I didn't watch the game. Was he cherry picking?
No, he didn't do any cherry picking. He was out there kicking ass and taking names. He was leading his team to a championship in Game 7. And this, of course, after the Game 6 fiasco, as described by those on the scene of the San Antonio Spurs, a team that should have, at least in the opinion of a few, a team that should have taken Game 6 and then would have won the championship. So, this has been a fascinating series, and the post-mortem on this thing, while LeBron James is going to be getting kudos, it will have more than its fair share, I think, of people savaging the San Antonio Spurs and the fact that they had it in their hands and they dropped it in the dirt.
Very good.
Thank you. Okay, cut. Greg Popovich will take a ton of grief for it, and I'm sure that the Spurs will spend the offseason, very, very disgusted with themselves. But if you're a sports fan and you've been on that end of things, and I have as a Laker fan, just going back to the days of the Lakers-Celtics when I was in high school, and I can remember sitting with a friend of mine. We were going into a party. It was our senior year in high school, and we were sitting listening to the final game of the Celtics and Lakers 69 when Don Nelson's shot hit the heel of the basket and went straight up in the air and came down and won it for the Celtics. And I could have just, I think I did spew in my friend's brand new Buick Riviera, which he was borrowing from his dad, which didn't have the cool rims, but he eventually did put the rims on it with the Chi-Chi balls.
Hey.
All right. All right, we'll be right back here, folks, with more post-mortem, not on the San Antonio Spurs or on the Miami Heat, but on Paula Deen. Paula Deen, we missed talking about Paula Deen last night. Paula Deen, Margaret Gray will be with us to do a little of her commentary on this specifically. And the N-word, it's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show at philhendryshow.com. Backstage passes, go grab one, go get it, go
Truth
love it, go jump it.
Truth is our bitch, the Phil Hendry Show.
Yeah, jump on a backstage pass and love on it.
maudlin here, but I was talking with the gang here during the break about, you know, we were talking about the San Antonio Spurs not able to put it away, obviously, the sixth game especially, and letting the Heat back in the door, and you know how it goes in sports. I mean, this is something that is it's a time-honored and shop-worn cliche all at the same time, which is, you know, if you let them back up off the mat, they're going to put you down. And that's what happened to the Spurs with the Heat. And you remember a lot of different things. You remember a lot of different games, a lot of different series. And one of the things that I remember was the American League Championship Series in 1986, the Angels and the Red Sox. The Angels, I believe, had, as a matter of fact, I'll look at this right now. The Angels had a 3-2 lead. They actually had a 3-1 lead. They led that series 3-1. Are you loving that? On October the 11th, they won the fourth game by a score of 4-3 in 11 innings, giving them a three. Am I right about that? 1-2-3. Yeah, giving them a 3-1 lead. All they needed was one more game. All they needed was one more game. The Red Sox. Now, this was 86, and this was the series, the eventual World Series, that was a disaster for the Red Sox. It was Billy Buckner, you know, the ball going through his legs, and the New York Mets win at first base.
Yeah, Buckner looked like a cripple.
He wasn't a cripple, man. If you ask Buckner, that guy was one of the best players going.
Billy Buck, I know all about Billy Baseball, all right? Billy Buck didn't get down for, you've got to get down, okay? You've got to almost go down on one knee. Put the glove down on the ground.
Look, Margaret, this isn't Little League, all right? You know, these are Major League professional players.
But I don't care. Are you trying to tell me?
Where did you learn about baseball?
I played baseball, and my father managed baseball, and I was a ball girl, if you'll pardon the expression. I never liked the description.
You're the ball girl.
Don't overwork that phrase. Yes, I was the ball girl. I'll kick his...
Hey!
You've got to get down on one knee, drop the glove to the ground. The ball... Watch the ball into the glove.
He's a major league player.
Really? Did he catch the ball?
No, he did not.
Thank you.
He was injured. He was injured. He had bad knees. He had bad ankles.
Bad ankles. Let me see. Last time I checked, you don't catch a ball with your ankle.
Oh! God! So anyway, in one of the most tragic of all eventualities in any sporting contest, I believe it was in Game 5, I could be wrong, in came Donnie Moore, a relief pitcher. And Donnie Moore needed to get Dave Henderson out. And Donnie Moore was not able to get Dave Henderson out. Dave Henderson smacked the home run, essentially letting Boston back into the series, gave him the win, and poor Donnie Moore, a relief pitcher, good ball player, a good pitcher, just one of those guys that was slated by fate to be the guy on the mound as the ball sails over the wall. You know, I mean, how many of those guys have there been in the history of Major League Baseball? And some of them, you know, like Ralph Branca, you know, went on to actually... make a couple of bucks off of it. You know, he gave up the home run to Bobby Thompson, and they went out and they did a whole series of presentations, Bobby Thompson and Ralph Branca, and the shot heard around the world, and Branca wound up making some money on it. That was not the case for Donnie Moore. He wound up committing suicide. And whether or not it was a direct result of that home run or whether it was a culmination of things, I think there was must have been a lot of depression there. But it was one of those just terribly... fated and just dark moments in baseball, at least if you were an Angel fan, and eventually for all of baseball when Donnie Moore took his own life. But it was a home run to Dave Henderson, and the Angels had a 3-1 lead, you know. So
you're saying Boston won the series?
Yeah, what do you think he's saying?
Don't talk to me like I pick up the garbage on Thursday morning, you little...
All right, take it easy, Mark. Yes, we're saying that Boston won the series.
Well, how am I supposed to know that?
I don't know. Maybe it had something to do with the fact that the Angel pitcher gave up a home run and then committed suicide, you know.
Well, maybe he... They could have won the game, and he still could. You know something? That reminds me of a story. Bill Wozzeszowski, do you remember him?
No.
No.
You don't?
No.
Boy, where have you guys been? He won the Greater Bowling Green Open, I think it was. Do you guys, you don't follow golf?
Not the Greater Bowling Green Open.
Oh, I see. So it's not big enough for you.
Margaret, I've never heard of it.
You know what? Why don't you guys get a clue? Bill Wozzeszowski won the Greater Bowling Green Championship, whatever it's called.
Open.
What is that?
That's what they call golf championships a lot of times.
He immediately went into his car and swallowed the barrel of a .38. And when they asked him later, why did you do it, he said, you know...
Wait, hold on for a minute.
Can I finish, please?
Wait, did he commit suicide?
Yes.
That's good. What? How's he going to be asked later?
May I finish, please?
Go ahead.
He went into his car, swallowed the barrel of a .38, and when they asked him later, why'd you do it, he said... It was a gag. I didn't know it was loaded. And then he died. There, does that answer your question?
God.
What are you looking at?
I'm looking at you, and I'm wondering whether that's a true story or not.
I never heard of it.
Well, you better... Am I a reporter?
Yes.
Then it's true. I'll get Frank on the line. As a matter of fact, we can get... not Don Bourbon. Who's the sports guy over there at the... Doug Dangert.
He's not a sports guy. I just want to know. Bill Wozzeszowski, or whatever the hell his name is.
It was something like, I don't know.
Okay. He wins the Greater Bowling Green Open, goes to his car.
What's he go to his car? Why don't he be on a TV and everything?
It wasn't covered by the TV. He won the tournament. He won the trophy. He got a check. He went to his car because he had to fit the big check into the car.
Yeah.
Well, what are you looking at?
He had to fit the big check... into the car.
Yes, they get... Oh, my God. You've never seen golf tournaments where they give you the big check.
I thought they give you a regular size check.
What do you mean they give you a regular...
Yeah, they give you a regular... They're going to show you a big check on account of going to be on TV.
Well, I don't know what any of you jackballs are talking about. They gave him a big check. And he went back to his car. Look at the butt on her, will you?
Margaret, you're a girl.
I don't... I can still admire a woman's ass. Very nice.
We're watching QVC. Anyway,
Yeah, so the large check, he's trying to fit it into the trunk of his car. He's trying to get it in the back seat. And that's where they think the gag went wrong, because he was supposed to pull the trigger on a blank, or it wasn't even loaded, and they're going to get a picture, and ha, 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 I'm only kidding. But somewhere between the time he couldn't get the check in the car and the time he put the barrel of the .38 in his mouth... Apparently, he got depressed enough to put a round in the chamber.
Why?
Because he couldn't get the check.
He couldn't get the check in the car.
So he did mean to kill himself.
Well, he might have blacked out or something. That's why he didn't really know. And when they finally said, was it a gag? He said, yes, and then he croaked.
You know what? If that's true, that's the weirdest story I've ever heard.
Yeah, bar none.
If it's true.
What does that mean, if it's true?
If it's true. That's exactly what it means, if it's true. The guy wins the Greater Bowling Green Open, goes to his car, can't fit the big check in, and gets depressed enough to stick a round in the chamber of the 38, a 38 that was going to be empty, and he...
So you're laughing at a man that blew... Oh.
No, I'm not. I just... It sounds to me like you're making fun of poor Donnie Moore.
I am. It's got nothing to do with him. I am not.
Oh, you're right. That girl does have a... I mean, so anyway, well, that's a wild story. That is definitely a wild story, Ed. All right, we're going to come back here with Paula Deen. We'll get off of sports and the tragedies, the triumphs, the bitter... What the hell do they call that? The...
The agony and the thrill of the victory.
The agony and thrill of victory.
No, man. The agony of defeat and the thrill of defeat.
You guys ought to be taken away and shot. The agony of defeat, the thrill of victory.
That's right. I'm sorry. The agony of defeat, the thrill of victory. Well, that may have a lot to do with Paula Deen.
I think so.
That's coming up next on the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
The Greater Bowling Green Open.
Call me a liar. Shame on you. Call me a liar twice. Shame on you. Shame on it.
I'm doing it.
Hendry.
Oh, bud, you slob.
What?
And it's red. Dude, you spilled your Red Bull all over this. I'm going to tell you something. If we spill any more Red Bull or anything else in this studio and it gets into this equipment, I'm going to commit homicide. You understand that, don't you?
Yeah, that's against the law.
I don't care if it's against the law. Ask me if I care. Ask me if I care if I go to jail. If you spill any more Red Bull in this studio, I'm going to kick your ass and take names later. I mean it. As sure as God made green apples.
Well, what is he doing in here with Red Bull?
I don't know. Why are you drinking that slop?
Because you do.
Oh, because I do, you have to.
Yeah, you're my idol, and you're also my, what you call, role model.
Why are you wiping that up with the elbow of your shirt?
Because that's the only thing I got. Man, why don't you go and get a napkin or something?
Go get some paper towels, you jackass.
What's wrong? Ow!
What a dork, man. He's wiping it up with the elbow of his shirt, and then he rammed his elbow into the table.
Yow! Yow!
Oh, quit faking it.
I'm not faking it. It hurts bad. Real bad.
You're not going to get any sympathy from me, man. Go get some towels. Clean that up. Look at that. It's soaking into the mouse pad. Ah, you dirty. See, what kind of Red Bull are you drinking? 10 calories. What a slob.
Well, that's better than the other kind.
What happened to that zero Red Bull you were drinking?
I had some Red Bull that was 0 calories, and it tasted like swill, but what are you going to do? Red Bull tastes, let's not kid ourselves, Red Bull tastes like you don't even want to know. Like you want to rip your nose, you want to rip your olfactory sense out. It is the funkiest thing. And dude, if you ever drink that stuff and it's not refrigerated.
Well, what moron would do that?
This one right here.
No, Mr. Aaron, you try to drink a Red Bull, try to bring it with no refrigeration?
Robert, Robert, are you?
No, I don't have nothing in my mouth.
All right, because you're going.
Am I doing what?
Are you drinking that without refrigeration?
Sometimes, one time I did, because it hadn't been refrigerated. I drank a Red Bull without refrigeration, and it tasted like doo-doo. Oh, God, was it funky. All right, let's move on, shall we, here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We have this story about, it was yesterday the story broke on Paula Deen. Very, very weird. And I know, Margaret, you're going to do the bulk of the reporting on this thing, but I just wanted to give people a little bit of background. Apparently, in a deposition taking of Ms. Deen by attorneys representing an individual that is suing her, she admitted to using the N-word. I don't know whether this is a major controversy or not. I personally always find it interesting to know who the people are and what they still believe. And I think the use of the N-word among whites is whether they're using it just among them other whites or whether they use it with black people. I imagine if you're white and you call a black person the N-word, you are asking for violence. I mean, I just have to believe that. If you don't understand that, then you are fatally stupid. However, I'm talking about whites that just use the N-word. It's interesting to me, who are these people that still use that word? There's a huge divide, I think, between them and others that get the hatefulness of it, the history of it, and its, you know, ramification and how it hits the ear of an African American as opposed to a white person, you know, and so on and so forth. So, Margaret?
Well, Paula Deen is a Southerner. Now, I don't know anything about this. I'm not from the South. I come from Pennsylvania. I'm an Easterner. So right away, I have to resist the temptation to feel a bit superior. And I'm not saying that I am. I think Paula Deen's been a wonderful success, a limited success, given what she is a success in.
Now, what do you mean by that?
Well, she's successful in the world of food. And if you come from the South and you're a large, shall we say, you're a fat female, if you want, my God, you better be good in the kitchen. You know, I mean, if you come from the South and you're female and you can't cook, it is almost mental disability, you know.
Yeah, maybe the physical kind.
You not hit the microphone, bud.
You almost hit me in the face, Buck.
Sorry.
like a mental disability.
Yes, it is almost a mental disability, bordering on spasms.
All right, I understand. So Paula Deen was what?
Paula Deen was in this deposition, as you said, and she admitted that she's used racial slurs in the past. Now, her camp has given a more in-depth explanation as to why. During a deposition where she swore to tell the truth, Ms. Deen recounted having used a racial epithet in the past, speaking largely about a time in American history which was quite different from today. She was born 60 years ago when America's South had schools that were segregated, different bathrooms, different restaurants, and Americans rode in different parts of the bus. This is not today. To be clear, Ms. Deen does not find acceptable the use of this term under any circumstance by anyone, nor condone any form of racism or discrimination. The celebrity chef and her brother are being sued for racial and sexual discrimination by Lisa Jackson, who worked as a manager at their restaurant. During a deposition in May, Jackson's lawyer asked Deen, 66, if she'd ever used the N-word. She said yes, frequently, especially when, quote, those coons don't... Oh,
give me that!
I read it wrong, I'm sorry.
Those coons.
She is... what I was doing there, Phil, and I wasn't doing what you do, which is to make it up for humor. I was paraphrasing and I was creating a historical dialogue... You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, 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 okay. It's like the novelization of history.
Yes.
Well, I don't think you should do that with a news story.
I was speculating. And if you speculate, this is something I know a little bit about, Phil, because I'm a journalist. It isn't just you sitting and reading your Hitler books and eating your Frito-Lays or whatever. It is me novelizing. So let's say that... this did take place. Paula Deen comes from a part of the country where it was very likely she said one day in her restaurant, boy, when you're done doing that, go get the rest of them coons. You know?
No, I do not know. No. First of all, I want to say this.
Please don't raise your voice.
Well, Margaret...
Please don't raise your voice at me.
Yeah, you shouldn't raise your voice at a lady or anything.
Oh, would you back it off? First of all, Margaret, let me say, I was born 60 years ago, okay?
You were born in California.
Hold on for a minute. You don't come of age, they say, until you don't come into consciousness of yourself and your surroundings until you're 7 or 8 or 9 years old. You're not really in the workforce until you're maybe 11, 12, 13. You're certainly not in a professional work environment until you're out of high school, and you're not in any position to be the supervisor of people, most likely until your late teens or early 20s, and then overall boss, the owner of a company, until maybe your late 20s, early 30s, if you're really a successful and motivated person. So what I'm saying is, by the time Paula Deen was running a restaurant, America had changed quite a bit. It would have been the 1980s. I turned 30 the same year that Paula Deen did, 1982. And it was a decidedly different country. We'd had civil rights. I'm not saying that everybody was squeaky clean, and we didn't have a black president. We would not have another. We would not have a black president for another 26 years. But the fact is, the country had changed and moved past the 60s of the Ku Klux Klan and the civil rights demonstrations and civil rights legislation. What I'm trying to say is, when this guy says this woman was born in a different time, yes, she was born in a different time. As I was. I was born in the 50s, too. But we were not out strolling around with cigars in our kissers at the age of 4 going,
hey, look at that coon over there.
Oh, you're trying to be funny now.
Pretty fun, Miss Ellie.
I'm just saying, you know.
So you think a little tiny baby is walking around saying filth like that?
No, but you do.
No, I do not.
Yeah, because you're saying, well, 60 years ago, Paula Deen would have been a little 4-year-old girl... When Montgomery went down, when Rosa Parks and the civil rights movement was really sparked during the Montgomery bus boycott, and Rosa Parks taking the seat in the front of the bus, that was what, 56? So
about 1960 or something.
No, it was not. It was 1956.
I don't think you're right about that. I think it's closer to what Bud was saying.
No, well, I am right. You're wrong. Look it up.
Yeah, look it up on Wikipedia, too.
Look it up on, what do they call, Wikipedia?
Wikipedia!
Boy, look at you getting all pissed off. What's your problem?
My problem is when you don't know your history and then you use stupid dates And
I'm not stupid, Phil.
All right, then let's use the right dates. She would have been four. I was 4 years old when the civil rights movement was getting its, you know, when they were fire hosing people on the bridge there in Selma. I was 10, 9 or 10 years old. So was she. When the civil rights legislation was signed, I was 12 or 13. When the riots broke out, I was in my early teens. We were not adults, Paula Deen and I. So when she finally got out into the workplace and starts throwing around the N-word, it's a different time. So I don't know if that's really a defense of her. However, I will say it was not contemporary, and it was not the times we live in today. In a statement to ABC News, her lawyer, Bill Franklin, said Deen does not condone or find the use of racial epithets acceptable. Meanwhile, the Food Network, which broadcasts two of her shows, has made it clear where they stand on the issue. Food Network does not tolerate any form of discrimination and is a strong proponent of diversity and inclusion. We will no longer, listen to this, we will no longer consider airing the new program that would be produced by Paula Deen entitled My Favorite N-Word Food, Greens and More, which was scheduled for... No, I'm kidding.
You can't kid about that stuff.
Phil, you don't want me to kid.
I don't want you to kid.
I wasn't kidding.
That would be great if they had a show like that.
Man, I don't know, man. My favorite N-word food.
Well, we know. Hi, I'm Paula Deen, and here's my here's my favorite food made by, you know... All right, we've got Professor Emery Clayton is going to join us to talk about this. Professor Emery Clayton from L.A. Canyon College. He is a professor of urban studies, and we will be talking with the good professor when we come back on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Peace. Here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, we have with us Professor Emery Clayton from L.A. Canyon College, who joins us this evening from Chefs, a nightclub in Northern California. He's been invited to watch Emerelda Wheeler, and Deen, I guess, has got everybody up seeing his talented wife, Professor.
It's a very interesting night tonight, Bill, because Deen asked me to come up and to watch his wife singing. I have heard her before. He said she'd gotten better, and that's not for me to say. I don't want to yell too much, but the first time I heard her, I was not impressed. You know what I said, that Deen.
I do remember that, but I think you're going to really enjoy it.
But I'm not going to keep my voice muted.
Okay, just so long as you don't get too distracted, because I know the singing does distract Deen.
I understand that, Deen. If you could move away from me, or I'll move away from you, that's all right.
I'd appreciate that. I have to watch my wife. I wanted to make eye contact.
I understand it. Phil, to the point that you are making this evening, I have been a teacher, and I have been I've been a mentor of young people for quite a number of years. That's a terrible horn. That's a terrible horn, man. Terrible horn, man.
I don't like it at all.
Terrible horn, man, Phil. I'm sorry I had to...
You know, this horn player...
Phil, don't start.
No, it's just every time I get on the air and your wife is singing, the horn player messes everything up.
I'm sorry, Phil. I should not have said anything. I am trying to be mindful of what the topic is tonight, but the horn, man, that cat cannot blow that thing with any semblance of decency. You know what I'm saying, Deen?
I understand.
You've got to be able to blow that horn in a decent way, with a semblance of some commonality and decency. The man that blows a horn the way that man's blowing that horn, come blow your horn, you know. But I
understand completely.
All right, Phil, but to get back to what we're talking about...
Let me see if I can't direct this a little bit. We're talking about Paula Deen. Now, tell me, in your opinion, you're an African-American, she's white. Let's get it right. I know you probably would tend more to think that she's just a racist, right?
Well, not necessarily. What I would say is this. We have an undereducated class, especially of generational. This lady is a part of my generation, of your generation. She is a white, She comes from a class of whites that tend to be undereducated. I'm not saying that Paula Deen is not an intelligent woman, but I am saying that I can tell by looking at her she did not have education. Now, what do I mean by that? I mean that when you look at some white women, the weight that they have on them, the girth, bespeaks a life of idleness or a life that has been spent not just working in a kitchen, but directing others below you. In a kitchen, because if you have that much weight on, and I say that with the greatest of respect, she's not a bad-looking woman, you're obviously spending more time sticking your hand in a bowl here, going into the icebox and grabbing some. In other words, you're grazing, and you're not working. So Paula Deen got that weight while she was directing blacks that work under her and saying to them, now you, and I'm not saying she said this, but in her mind, she's thinking, you, black number one, you go over to black number two, and you oil that up, oil up that biscuit platter, because I want that biscuit platter oiled up. Now I'm going to go over half one of the biscuits that you just made, and then I will direct black number four, and so on and so forth.
So in other words, what you're saying is she's directing all of these people of color who are working underneath her, and which gives her kind of an entitled feeling?
I would say yes.
And then she's also grazing the food.
Yeah, if she's saying, go grease up a skillet. And you have to understand, there is, as an African-American man, coming from that era where sex between a black and a white was forbidden, and you heard a white woman say to you, go grease the skillet, you got nervous. I know I got nervous. I began to sweat and began to shake because I'm thinking, what does this woman want from me now?
Well, Emery, this is Margaret Gray.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm not quite clear what you mean. So if she would have said to you, go grease a skillet...
You could be on the receiving end of a request for you to take off your apron and repair to a toilet or to some private closet or room and get it going, get it ready. Get yourself ready for, you know, who knows what we used to call a slip and slide, a grease lightning. And
well, what is that? Are you talking about sex, illicit sex?
Well, you want to call it illicit.
Well, if you're in a closet, in other words, you're hiding it from people.
Yeah, it's secret, right. But it was, again, in those days, it was...
Now, when you said go grease a skillet...
That was code, yeah.
Paula Deen is a very upstanding... You're not saying that she would...
I don't know. If she's using the N-word and she's saying, hey, boy... Go grease a skillet. That young man is going to be nervous. He's going to, he may go out, excuse me for saying this, but when you got a woman that looks like Paula Deen, and she's licking her lips telling you to go grease a skillet, you might as well go out. Well, I better not. I shouldn't say this, Mr. Henry, but I swear to Almighty God, God forgive me for saying this, I'd go out and I'd lynch myself. And
oh, God!
I'm just saying, if that's what Paula Deen... was
good Lord, what an image.
I forgive me, I shouldn't have said that, but I'm telling you, if that's what a white woman had in mind for me, that's all I'm trying to say.
No, Phil, I think you're in. You better just tell him to...
Excuse me, don't talk. Are you talking about me?
Yeah, we are, Professor. We're talking about you. Yeah, we'll be right with you.
Whoa, hold on there, Dickman. You're the lowest of the low. You're like the intern, right?
Yes, sir.
Well, you don't talk to... You don't tell me. You don't direct me. I want Mr. Henry to direct me.
Yeah, but sir, we're not talking behind your back. I would like you to be involved in this, Professor Clayton. I think you need to apologize for what you just said.
All right, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have used that term, but I can tell you it does make you nervous.
Because that was... That was wrong, and that was very, very...
I'm sorry, okay? I'm saying I'm sorry. I am sorry. I'm not sorry for being me. I'm not sorry for the things I think, but I'm sorry so that you don't feel nervous and start wetting yourself or whatever you people do.
I'm not wetting myself. I'm just thinking of my audience.
Well, you know something, Phil? Paula Deen's the one that said the N-word, not me. Paula Deen's the one that said, hey, boy... Go grease up a skillet.
What is it with you and hey, boy? You know, how do you know she's saying it like that?
Because that is the Southern way. If you've got an accent, you're white, it comes out like that. See, if you're black and you say boy, that just sounds like boy. You know, because black people have a certain accent. White people say boy. That comes out loud. It comes out like a percussive explosion. I wish I had Dr. Kendler here. He is our speech teacher at L.A. Canyon. And Dr. Kendler could describe for you the percussive, concussive boy that if I could get him, boy, I'd love to get him on the line. God, I'd do anything. I would sink to any depravity to get Dr. Kendall on the line.
Well, let's see if we can get Dr. Kendall on the line. We're coming up against the hour. We're going to have to reset the topic when we come back. We'll talk about Paula Deen with Professor Emery Clayton. We'll have Dr. Kendall, the speech doctor.
Yeah, he's a speech. That means he's not a doctor that fixes your tongue. He teaches you how to talk like people can understand you.
Yeah, in case you can't talk good.
Right.
All right, we'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
So, are you going to keep him on the air?
Yeah.
I don't want him on the air.
Hey, boy. Come here.
Phil Hendry.